Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly news magazine produced by independent reporters from your community radio station and others around the country. I'm Vinny Lombardo, your host this week in Santa Cruz, California. Today on Sprouts, just six companies own and control most of what we see and hear on television and radio. What impact does consolidation of media outlets have on our lives? To what extent are media moguls setting the agenda at the FCC? How can ordinary citizens act to reclaim their systems of communication? All that and more coming up next on Sprouts. On September 11th, 2001, an unprecedented event unfolded live on TV right in front of millions of viewers. No, I'm not talking about the horrific attacks which claimed over 3,000 civilian lives. I'm speaking of the news coverage itself. That day, as thousands perished right there on TV, the profit-driven national networks stopped running ads and agreed to share content in an effort to bring viewers the most extensive coverage possible as people watched in stunned anticipation. It was just 2 days later, with the world's eyes fixed on Afghanistan, that Federal Communications Commission Chairman Michael Powell opened up a review of the agency's media cross-ownership rules. Enacted in 1975 to promote diversity of ownership, the guidelines limit the number of outlets one company can own in a given market and ensure broadcast and print facilities remain independent of each other. Despite a virtual media blackout, the issue sparked a firestorm of opposition. A diverse cross-section of Americans concerned about corporate control of media content mobilized to stop this plan. Peace groups like Code Pink and Move On suddenly found themselves in an uneasy alliance with the National Rifle Association. Remarkably, 2 million comments were filed with the FCC, 4 times more input than the agency has received on any rule change. In the face of this unique coalition, the Republican-controlled FCC voted 3-2 at their June 2, 2003 meeting and upended the decades-old cross-ownership ban. Now, a single company could own newspapers, TV, and radio stations in the same market. One company could conceivably control up to 45% of the audience. The old guidelines set the cap at 35% of a market share, but two companies had been violating those regulations for some time before the changes were set forth. Viacom and Fox had holdings capable of reaching up to 39% of audiences in some parts of the country. The FCC changes barely took effect when 3 months later, in September 2003, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals in Philadelphia stepped in and said, "Not yet." A lawsuit by the Media Access Project won a favorable ruling, and the decision temporarily blocked implementation of the new rules. In response to the ruling, and in a move some say was designed to quell growing opposition to FCC policy trends, Chairman Powell announced plans for a task force on broadcast localism. The idea? To travel the U.S. and find out how broadcasters are serving their local communities. The FCC called for 6 hearings to speak with broadcast professionals, emergency service providers, and ordinary citizens about the impacts of consolidation and come up with a plan for solutions to the crisis in media. Prior to the July 21st meeting in Monterey, California, the FCC held localism hearings in Charlotte, North Carolina, San Antonio, Texas, and Rapid City, South Dakota. Bob Radcliffe, deputy chief of the FCC's Media Bureau, says the locations were chosen to hear from a wide spectrum of Americans.
One of the hearings will be in Washington, which is the 8th-size media market in the country. And one of the reasons we're going to different size markets, we went to Rapid City, which is an extremely small market, and we went to San Antonio, which is a fairly good-sized middle market. We did that to get a representation of the kinds of markets and the different problems those markets have. They do have different problems.
The FCC has plans for 2 additional hearings later this year in Maine and Washington, D.C. The assembly in Monterey was the only such meeting for the entire West Coast and had initially been set to take place in March, but a scheduling conflict postponed the hearings. As the July 21st date approached, it became clear to officials that there might be a large attendance. With seating limited to just 400 people, free tickets were given out in advance. Morning and evening giveaway times were chosen to maximize participation, but dozens were turned away after the first 150 tickets had been handed out. Many voiced resentment about the choice of location for such an important hearing. Timothy Kreck is with Veterans for Peace.
I mean, here we are in a small little town. The only hearing in California is in Monterey, a town of 60,000 or 100,000, when there's 32 million people in this state. What the hell is going on with this? It's an outrage.
At the first ticket giveaway, about two dozen corporate media workers were at the front of the line. Some I recognized from their on-air appearances on the local CBS affiliate KION-TV46, which is owned by Clear Channel Communications. This unidentified man boasted of how he would give his ticket to a friend, Kim, a KION employee.
Do you want to tell me why you're here?
She asked me to be here.
She asked you to be here?
Yes.
She your boss?
No. She's a friend.
What are you planning on saying to the FCC?
I plan on saying nothing. I'm going to give her my ticket.
So you're going to get your ticket and give it to her?
Yes, I am.
He goes on.
Because I agree with the things that they're doing and don't have any other issues, I'm welcoming the support of them and their furthering what they actually do. So that may give you a little more of a basis for why I'm here, other than just thinking that I'm turning it over to a media outlet.
But that seems to be what you're doing.
That's exactly what I'm doing, but I'm doing it in support of the media outlet.
George Christie, president of Oregon-based Seal Rock Communications, was also waiting in line for a ticket. Seal Rock owns KCBA TV35, the local Fox affiliate.
Some consolidation's necessary in order to save smaller product in markets, but I think consolidation just for the sake of bigness is not necessarily smart. I think that it helps in certain areas where they can't afford to have a local news product.
A lot of citizens in this part of the country often complain about the lack of local coverage by organizations such as KCBA Fox. Your argument or rebuttal to these arguments?
Well, we try, our entire purpose in having one newscast, we have a 10 o'clock newscast for a half hour as a Fox affiliate. Fox affiliates only set aside a half hour. We try and make our entire broadcast as much as possible local, to the extent that we're even thinking of cutting out all national sports and other things that are of national significance but aren't that important that people can get on other outlets. We think that local sports, local issues, and local news are the most important thing that we can produce for the product, for the community.
KCBA and Clear Channel's KION operate from the same television studio in Salinas.
They don't care about the public airwaves. Like that fast food slogan says, they want it their way.
A line of police officers ringed the outer perimeter of the Monterey Convention Center where the FCC meeting was held. A smallish crowd had gathered by late afternoon in a makeshift protest pit, which was situated near the hotel bus terminal. Hundreds more lined up for tickets. A smattering of public interest angels milled about as members of the Monterey Bay Central Labor Council and other California union leaders held a rally before the hearings. Art Pulaski, executive treasurer of the California Labor Federation, is wary of further consolidation and suggests that ad-driven content will continue to generate censorship.
Under the direction of the FCC, it is in fact a Walmart that can purchase the media markets. One of the primary sources of contention in communities may in fact own the media market.
John Connolly is national president of AFTRA, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, representing some 80,000 broadcast professionals. As he entered the building, Connolly stopped to address the workers' rally.
A movement has been ignited that goes across the ideological spectrum and every corner of our country and every community, from labor to farmers to communities of color and language. And that is the movement to democratize our media, to take back the fundamental truth embodied in our law that the airwaves belong to the people.
For the second consecutive time, FCC Chair Michael Powell sidestepped the localism proceedings, though he was in the region. Despite a late start, the localism hearing soon got underway.
Welcome to the public hearing of the Federal Communications Commission on Localism and Broadcasting.
FCC Commissioner Kathleen Abernathy was chair, with Commissioners Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein present. On June 24th, a federal court in Philadelphia overturned last year's media ownership rule changes and ordered the FCC to rewrite them. In his opening remarks, Commissioner Adelstein discussed why he thought the rules were insufficient.
We only held one official hearing as a group, and we didn't put an outline of the rules out for public comment. If we had, I think a lot of the flaws that the court found in the decision could have been addressed before we made them final, and we wouldn't have had that decision the way we did. And we shouldn't have dismissed the views of 3 million people with a single passing paragraph. Well, thanks to all the effort and concern that went into it, I don't think the FCC will be able to do that again. As a matter of fact, I'm confident they won't.
A series of panelists also joined the FCC, with each given 5 minutes to speak. Among them was Joe Heston, General Manager of Monterey Salinas Santa Cruz TV station KSBW, which is owned by the Hearst Corporation. Heston attributes KSBW's success to their local emphasis on national issues.
We enhanced our local news with customized regional and national coverage tailored to issues of importance to our local viewers. Our Hearst Argyle sister station, KCRA in Sacramento, provides interviews with our local senators and assembly representatives on issues such as local water control and the impact of proposed budget cuts. And our Hearst Argyle Washington News Bureau provides us with similar localized coverage through regular interviews with our congressmen, and just recently produced an exclusive profile of a local Salinas soldier selected for President Reagan's honor guard.
Sakura Saunders disputes this idea of localism as embodied in Hearst Corporation's programming. Saunders works at College Station KDVS-FM in Davis, California, and is spearheading an effort to open up KDRT, a new low-power FM station coming soon to the airwaves there. Additionally, she works for CorpWatch. Saunders recently conducted a review of the public file at Hearst Corporation's Sacramento and Stockton Television Holdings, KCRA, and KQCA. Saunders says she was stunned by the findings.
Since Hearst bought KQCA and KCRA in 1999, the local news broadcasts had decreased by over 80%. And this happened because now they take satellite feeds, which is shared between all the Hearst stations. Now, this is fine for health and other, you know, national issues, non-local issues, but what I found particularly disturbing was that under the topic of city growth, there was a decrease of over 83% in local news broadcasts. And so this is a clear example of what happens when corporations buy local television stations. There is less local news, which means less local reporters, which means less access to the airwaves, and that's incredibly disempowering for a community, because if you're an activist, if you've experienced injustice, that you are so much less likely to get access to the airwaves, to even have a chance of rallying popular support for your cause.
You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a production of your community radio station and many others around the country. I'm Vinny Lombardo, your host this week in Santa Cruz, California. Back inside the Monterey Convention Center, AFTRA President John Connolly discussed the results of another recent survey done by a consortium of unions. In the study, a broad cross-section of print and broadcast news professionals were asked about the results of market-driven editorial decisions.
These workers' survey overwhelmingly cited an increased emphasis on the bottom line, a declining quality of community coverage, too little focus on complex issues, and the ever-growing influence of ratings or circulation in the newspaper business on coverage and programming decisions.
Like many of the panelists representing commercial media outlets, Eduardo Dominguez used his time to portray his station in the best light possible, pointing out community events they have sponsored. Dominguez is vice president and general manager of KSTS, serving San Jose and surrounding areas. KSTS is part of the Telemundo network, whose corporate parent is General Electric.
What matters is that Telemundo's established commitment in our community of license goes beyond programming. In addition to the strong relationship we have with nonprofit community and cultural agencies serving the Latino population throughout the coverage area, KSTS maintains a solid relationship with the local business leaders through the 15 Hispanic chambers throughout Northern California, from Sonoma County in the north to Concord and Alameda counties in the east, and here at Monterey County in the south, by sponsoring and participating in an array of local programs and initiatives.
Of all the panelists, hip-hop DJ Davey D from KPFA's Hard Knock Radio drew the loudest response from the crowd. He discussed his removal from Bay Area Clear Channel radio station KMEL. In October 2001, Davey D was canned after an interview with Congresswoman Barbara Lee, who cast the lone vote against President Bush's post-9/11 War Powers Act. Davey D asserts there are too few DJs willing to speak out publicly, leaving station owners and managers to represent the public interest.
Which you often have to question, is it motivated, especially this whole question about localism, is it motivated by an economic agenda, or is it really a sincere, genuine concern about what the local community needs, even if they, as owners, disagree with that? And that's where the real question comes in. So we have to keep that in mind. The other thing that happens is that we forget when we do all this smoke and mirrors that all these changes that we're talking about, even if you can find radio stations that show these examples, they're not institutionalized. So yeah, we can point all across the country and say, this DJ at this station, he showed all the public love for us. Oh, that radio station, they did a nice thing. They did a concert and all that. But is it institutionalized? What happens if that local DJ who's doing the favor for y'all doesn't like you? What happens if the radio station that owns 12 in the market decides that they don't feel your organization because you were organizing and doing all this activism work to result in these type of hearings? You might not be on the airwaves and you won't have access to the public. So you have to have these things institutionalized. It just can't be nice guys doing you a favor. That's a problem.
Initially, about 2 hours were set aside for public comments, but the meeting extended until nearly midnight. Those who wanted to speak would have to navigate a two-tiered ticket scheme. Becky Lockhart of the FCC Media Bureau does her best to explain the process.
There's 10 numbers for each group, and we draw a group number, and whoever has the group number gets to come up and speak for 2 minutes. So we're just going to draw them randomly.
One after another, speakers blasted big media for abdicating their responsibilities to the public during the open mic portion of the five-hour hearing. Peter Quick of Salinas is on the SEIU Local 817 Executive Board. He bemoans the lack of working people's issues in corporate media.
We receive the usual scant, superficial soundbite coverage with absolutely no opportunity to meaningfully present our point of view. And when unions are covered, we get the business perspective. We hear about labor costs, labor unrest, and wage pressure. As if we are, by definition, nothing but a burden on business.
Others voiced resentment about the choice of location for such an important hearing, but vowed to continue to pressure the FCC into meaningful action on media reform. Paul Johnston is president of the Monterey Bay Central Labor Council.
Even here in Monterey, in the most affluent, least accessible, isolated corner of our county, and perhaps one of the most isolated places you could have picked to hold your only hearing... Even here in Monterey, it seems that the movement for media democracy is ready to turn a corner.
India Weeks of Monterey has filed numerous complaints to the FCC about Clear Channel Radio's KSJO morning show with Mikey the Perpetrator. She used her time to play a segment of the show for the commissioners present.
Well, Katie, I don't know. What are the two most important holes on a woman?
Her nostrils. So she can breathe while she's giving you a blowjob.
That's 4-year-old Katie. She was a regular feature on the Mikey show. She called in often and told dirty jokes. Mikey no longer featured Katie as a caller after the Dallas Police Department investigated. And you might ask, why Dallas? Well, it turns out that though it was being heard locally here in Monterey, the show was produced in Dallas and being voice streamed here into our little community. The sexual exploitation unit in Dallas, Texas, looked into the issue, contacted the station. The station said it was an adult woman who was an actress, but refused to cooperate with any further investigation or provide any proof.
When her time ran out, the audience yelled to let Weeks continue. Eventually, Commissioner Abernathy agreed to look into her matter.
Everything I heard is completely inappropriate, rises to the level of indecency, and we've got to go after him. This is the first I know about it. Yes.
17-year-old Mike McManus is station manager of KSPB-FM, a small high school station in Pebble Beach. He says major media ignores the real needs of young people and leaves them feeling alienated.
We're treated as dollar signs to be manipulated. We are smart thinking people and we need to be given the opportunity. We need to be recognized that we can do something.
As the need for reliable information grows, so has consolidation, says Delia Saldivar, regional manager of Radio Bilingue, which operates KHDC-FM in Salinas. Due to weakened regulations in the broadcast industry, she points out that Spanish language services are not immune to this phenomenon. Saldivar says the situation neglects the needs of the growing majority of Latinos across the nation.
We urge the FCC to look closely at the actual demographics of our state and our nation and investigate whether or not the current situation provides equal access to linguistic or cultural minorities. After all, aren't these airwaves meant to serve the public?
One possible solution to local media ownership is low-power FM radio. The Senate Commerce Committee recently moved forward on SB 2505, a.k.a. the McCain-Leahy Act, which would restore the technical aspects of the original FCC plan to license thousands of new radio stations. Just north of Monterey, in Watsonville, California, a controversy is brewing over the future of an LPFM station approved last year by the FCC. The license was granted to a group called Ohana de Watsonville after an opposing application was withdrawn. But the McCain-Leahy Act might not go far enough to rectify the situation.
Is important because it's all-encompassing and it doesn't exclude anyone. And it's also, for lack of a better word, it's sweet.
Morgan Cost and her husband Jeff operate Superior Hydro, a small seed company in Watsonville, California. They aren't from Hawaii, but say their love for the music runs deep. When their favorite radio program had its hours cut, they got the idea to run a radio station which plays nothing but the sounds of the islands.
If you're spinning the dial and you heard some, you'd stop and listen, and it appeals to a broad base of people.
4 years ago, the Costs were thrilled to learn the FCC had created a new low-power FM radio service and would be offering permits to community groups. They established Ohana de Watsonville and applied for an LPFM license in June 2000. Leslie Lopez has worked with the Watsonville Human Rights Committee since its founding in 1994. 2 years later, the group started an unlicensed 15-watt radio station called Radio Watson. The pirate station, which broadcast a variety of programs, served the mostly Spanish-speaking community. After receiving a cease and desist letter from the FCC in 1998, Radio Watson voluntarily shut down. Leslie Lopez explains the decision.
In Watsonville, which is 75% to 80%, Latino, Mexican mostly, almost everyone has a family member who's undocumented or is trying to get citizenship, is some way under scrutiny.
After signing off the air, some in the group sought legal avenues for a radio station. In 2000, the Watsonville Human Rights Committee also applied for a license. But because some of their members had been involved in the illegal station, the permit was rejected. Frank Bardicky has lived in Watsonville for over 30 years and since 1994 has organized with the Watsonville Human Rights Committee.
Without a micro radio movement, there would have been no regulations allowing any kind of micro radio. And so it was the movement that produced it, and then the people who led the movement were excluded from getting licenses.
Despite the denial, the Watsonville Human Rights Committee application was still holding up the Costs. Then, in spring 2000, members of the committee approached the Costs, offering to withdraw their application in hopes of working together. The Costs amended theirs with Bardicky's help in exchange for some airtime and a hand in running the future station. For 2 years, the groups worked together to establish the new station as a community resource that would broadcast a mixed format in English and Spanish. A construction permit was granted to the amended application in April 2003, and the Costs decided to call the new station KAPU, Kapu, meaning taboo in Hawaiian. By all accounts, this is when the group's divergent views for the future station became clear. Soon, all communication between the parties was strained. A dispute arose about content, but Cost maintains there were never any formal agreements on this. She claims the application made clear their intent to broadcast all Hawaiian music with some hours set aside for bilingual talk programming.
In the description of the station, the musical content would be 100% Hawaiian music with talk programming in Spanish and English.
The application that was granted said Hawaiian and Spanish language music.
Frank Bardicky.
And so she's just, that's a very, very convenient lapse of memory on her part.
This situation could be different. After major lobbying efforts by National Public Radio and the National Association of Broadcasters in December 2000, Congress passed and President Bill Clinton signed the Radio Broadcasting Preservation Act. It was attached as a rider to that year's budget authorization bill. The act curtailed the FCC's original vision for LPFM, dramatically reducing the number of new stations. It also made sure any former pirates would be forbidden from ever obtaining a license. In recent weeks, the Senate Commerce Committee acted on Senate Bill 2505, a bill that will reinstate certain aspects of the LPFM plan. The bipartisan bill is being introduced by Arizona Senator John McCain. Speaking on the committee floor June 4th, McCain said, quote, "The enactment of this bill will immediately make available a number of low-power FM frequencies," end quote. However, not everyone is satisfied with McCain's effort. Bob Ugly is the founder of Free Radio San Diego, which began its unlicensed broadcasts in 2002. No LPFM frequencies were available on the dial there after the passage of the Radio Broadcasting Preservation Act. While Bob Ugly concedes measured support for the McCain bill, he points out that more than 50% of the LPFM licenses have gone to religious broadcasters.
And I'm not trying to slam on religious programming at all, but it certainly, I think, is out of proportion with community broadcasting.
But for members of the Watsonville Human Rights Committee, the McCain-Leahy bill may be their only chance to have a legal radio station for the people of their community. Again, Leslie Lopez.
It's a sad time for us. You know, we've worked on this since 1996, and there's plenty of things that we have to say and a lot of skills that we have among us, and we are basically left without a voice. And the whole point of a community station is to communicate with the people that you share space with to build a better community. And that is what is being denied.
By the terms of the FCC permit, the Costs have until October to get Kapu on the air. Costs says some program hours would be available to the community, but didn't specify which hours and times. The Watsonville Human Rights Committee, meanwhile, have abandoned an earlier plan to pressure the Costs into opening up time for their group, and are moving forward with plans for a programming collective. They say other options will be explored in due time. That's it for this edition of Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, looking at citizen actions to protect local control of broadcast media. I'm Vinny Lombardo, your host and producer this week from Santa Cruz, California. Special thanks to Ursula Rudenberg for coordination and to Pacifica Radio's Jim Bennett for satellite distribution. Thanks also to the High Country Community Radio Coalition for web support. For more information about Sprouts or to hear past shows, visit www.sproutsradio.org. That's sproutsradio.org. For Sprouts, I'm Vinny Lombardo. Thanks for listening.